Welcome to the ASHP Official Podcast, your guide to issues related to medication use, public health, and the profession of pharmacy.
Thank you for joining us for the ASHP Pharmacy Leadership Podcast. This series focuses on leadership topics within pharmacy practice, including the business of pharmacy, development of leadership skills, career transitions, and more. My name is Hannah Vanderpool, and I will be your host. Today, we're speaking with Lindsay Kelly, who is the Associate Chief Pharmacy Officer at Michigan Medicine. Lindsay is also the chair of the ASHP section, Pharmacy Practice Leaders. Our next speaker is Christy Norman, who is the Vice President of Pharmacy Services for Emory Healthcare. And Christy is the chair of ASHP's Pharmacy Executive Leadership Alliance. Our third speaker is Suzanne Shea, who is the Vice President of System Pharmacy and Clinical Nutrition at Sharp Healthcare. And Suzanne is on ASHP's Pharmacy Forecast Advisory Committee, which provides perspectives on emerging trends and issues influencing our profession. Welcome. So our first question is just an overview and introduction to all of our listeners of all of you women leaders. So to get us started, I'd like to ask each of you to share your career journey. And imagine people are listening in on this because they're interested in leadership, formal and informal. So if you could just share with us your leadership, career journey, and potentially talk to us if there was a critical point in your journey that encouraged you to pursue leadership, or if there was a female role model, a mentor or sponsor who supported you early in your career, what did the support look like? So Lindsay, why don't we go to you first?
Absolutely. Thank you, Hannah. So I do think for me, there were certainly critical points. So I began my residency training in Minneapolis after pharmacy school and had previously been involved in professional organizations, but not within ASHP. And so I had some ideas about how I might go about my career and what a leadership role might or might not look like for me. And I think specifically, I found myself in two residency programs, both with excellent female leaders as role models who then also became advocates. And I think having that encouragement early on to get involved and to, you know, really talk about the value of leadership of professional organizations was really meaningful. I would also add that I had at that time, I happened to set up I was on a rotation where I was setting up interviews, and I had what is now HISPAL residents coming in for interviews. And there was this HISPAL resident, this female HISPAL resident who came in, and I just remember thinking to myself, wow, I got to figure out what that person is doing because they have got it together. And that was really inspiring for me. And so I think having those kind of pivot points then caused me to then consider, you know, residency training as a component of my leadership or my career. And then those same individuals are still in my group and still guide me and impact my trajectory as I make decisions in my career about leadership. So I think I don't know that I would be in the same place without the women that impacted me then and now.
Thank you, Lindsay. Christy, why don't we go to you next?
Yes, I would say that a big pivot point for me in thinking about leadership occurred during my rotations in the fourth year as a pharmacy student and getting into a scenario where I had a last minute rotation change, which led to me being on a practice management rotation where I had my first glimpse into what it would look like to be in health system pharmacy administration. And at that point, I was beginning to apply for residencies and didn't know if I was going to go down the clinical pathway or the management pathway. I decided that I was more inclined to go down the management pathway or the leadership pathway, but did want to go into a program that had a strong clinical focus as well, which led me into my residency training, where I have encountered a number of female mentors who are still my mentors today. And so I will have to back up and say that first glimpse into management was actually not with a female or a woman on rotation. And this was at a time where there were still mostly men in leadership, if you look back 10, 15 years ago. So I don't want to underestimate the role that men play in exposing females and women to potential leadership opportunities. Many of them continue to be my mentor as well, but I've carried the leadership skills and the perspective around what it would look like to lead as a woman for my rotation and continue to foster those relationships today.
Thank you, Christy. And we're going to pivot now to Suzanne. How about your leadership journey?
Thank you. I had to carve out a little bit different journey for myself. I did not go into a residency program, but was extremely fortunate to first come from a background of strong women. My mother and my grandmother, believe it or not, went back to school as older adults, and my grandmother got her degree at the age of 50. My mom went back and got a master's degree. And so I feel like there's a little bit of nurture versus nature in there to follow those paths of strong women in my family. But when I think about where I landed coming out of pharmacy school and not having a residency, I was very fortunate, and it was just happenstance, that the director of pharmacy that I went to work for initially was a woman, and she was a very good leader. She demonstrated a lot of fairness in her approach, and I learned from that. So I, was a staff pharmacist and a clinical pharmacist at the time, but I watched her, and she was very supportive of me and in my journey. And I was also fortunate to work at a hospital that offered some leadership training. It was a little bit on the side, these 1-hour classes you could go to, and I took every single one. There were a lot of things that I look back and I say, I was just fortunate those were presented in the place that I went to work. She gave me my first leadership and management opportunity. And some of that actually were guided by the nurses that I worked with as well. I felt like I was in a really good spot. But I also made a decision around, do I pursue more of a clinical role or one that's more management leadership focused? And I did make the decision to go get MBA, which I still tell people was one of the best decisions that I made. And I just want to point out that there was one particular person that I really took her words to heart. My first director of pharmacy job was in an organization that managed a lot of hospital pharmacies. And I was the recipient of a new pharmacy director award. And when I was standing up to get my award with the CEO, who was a woman, she whispered in my ear, she said, "We need more women up here," because everybody I was standing with was a man. And I just absorbed that, and I could feel her energy in that moment that, similar to Christy, there just weren't a lot of women in leadership. I remember going to GPO meetings and being the only female there. So those, never miss that opportunity. You never know when that small sentence or those words that you say to somebody may be kind of life-changing for them. So in that case, she really was, and she continued to be a mentor.
Thank you. I'm curious, from our panel today, some advice to people listening. How do you ensure that your voice is heard, or even that you're, at the proverbial table as a leader in terms of being seen as a decision maker, being heard as a decision maker, and valued for that? Do you have any advice for those listening who feel that their ideas are not considered, or what to do if they feel like they're not being included in important decisions? Or, I'm curious on your perspective if you feel there's a unique angle to manage because we are women in advocating for our voice. Christy, why don't we start with you? What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, what I'll say here is that we're doing a much better job of getting at the table to begin with. And so once you're at the table, making sure your voice is heard is that next step. And there are a couple of suggestions that I have for approaching this scenario. One, making sure that you're able to assess what your role is at that table and when is there time for you to add value to the conversations, and being very precise and capturing those moments. But also, too, if you're at the table and feel that your voice is not being heard, it helps to have a couple of self-aware members that are already at that table that can help accelerate your voice. Sharing those concerns when you feel like you haven't been heard and pointing out, maybe not in the course of the meeting, but certainly after the meeting, that, hey, I feel like I wasn't being heard. Is there a reason for that? Because sometimes people just aren't aware. We often find ourselves in scenarios where we're being parroted, and that it's not a good idea until someone else says it outside of a woman. But then having someone at the table can say, yes, point back to, yes, that's what Christy just said, or that's what Lindsay just said, helps to raise awareness that that's occurring in the dialogue of that conversation.
Suzanne, how about you? What are your thoughts on this question?
I agree with what Christy said entirely. And I think there are things that we can teach each other and things that I've picked up over the years. You were kind of speaking to this, Christy, a little bit about know your audience. So when you do get that seat at the table, be prepared to, you know, add value to the conversation and understand what the folks at the table want to hear from you. So I think being prepared is a good idea. You don't want to waste people's time and you don't want to be that person maybe that's overly talkative. I mean, that could be anybody. That's not a male or female thing. You know, when there are those people at the meeting that aren't really contributing, I often work with people to make sure their words are impactful and important and we're not wasting people's time. And being credible, I think, is very important. So it's kind of around doing your homework. And, you know, I think we've all sat around at a meeting and had kind of that burning desire to say something, and maybe that moment passes and then you feel badly. Don't beat yourself up. You know, there'll always be a chance. Maybe you voice something after a meeting or you have that other person that's there that can, you know, help get your message across. You know, anymore, we can send an email or something and say, hey, I forgot to say something. So don't ever feel like you missed your opportunity. I think it's really important that we don't enter in these situations with too high of expectations of ourselves, especially as women, and don't beat ourselves up about it.
Good advice. Yes. Lindsay, how about you?
So I will, I guess, build a little bit on what Christy said, specifically related to what I'll say thoughtful parroting. So and intentional. I had a colleague who did that for me in leadership conversations and would, you know, intentionally direct back to, I think that, you know, is what Lindsay just said. And that actually helped quite a bit in terms of, I think, retraining some of the way the conversation went in those groups. So I thought that was really meaningful. I also think the importance of calling out the more introverted folks. It's easy to always focus on like, am I capturing the input from the woman at the table? Did I get the input from someone else at the table? I think our introverts often get overlooked. I myself am an extrovert. And so I think that's really easy for me to do. But I think one of the things that like I really challenge people to think about and to be intentional about when they're at those tables is specifically women introverts, who I think often, even when asked, are more hesitant. And I have found that one of the things that I've been asked to do as a leader is to provide information early on and to allow time for processing. So oftentimes I'll come back and I'll say, you know, I noticed I haven't heard from you or something like that, just so that there's time to process. And I think that's something that I've had a lot of colleagues recommend for me when I'm at the table. So I think that's something I would recommend.
That's such an interesting angle, Lindsay. And, you know, I was thinking about this. Sometimes it's not necessarily that somebody's suppressing your voice. Sometimes you have to find your voice and make it heard in whatever way that is. So you have to find your voice, and that's your responsibility too, right? Okay. So I love this question. I'm really interested to hear your thoughts on this. What does it mean to you to lead authentically? And has this changed for you over time or with different roles or in different organizational cultures? So Suzanne, why don't we start with you for this question?
I've actually spent a lot of time thinking through this, especially recently as I look back over my career as it gets longer. I think there's a couple of things here. You hear people say, be yourself. Well, what does that mean? You have to kind of understand what your voice is. And it changes over time. It may change with circumstance, may change with your employer, that sort of thing. I think it's important to listen to feedback. But at the same time, some of that feedback isn't always positive. And one time I was told that I was a bull in a china shop. And what was I going to do with that information? Well, I thought, that could be a good thing, depending, you know, are you setting out to, destroy the china shop? I don't know. But I am kind of stubborn. And so that makes me have to take time to reflect on, you know, when I get advice and people have an opinion about how I lead and that sort of thing, I do take the time to reflect. And I think that's part of maturing as a leader. And being able to stop and say, okay, what's the assessment of this? But other things that I've heard and advice that I've seen is that women say, I'm sorry too much. I don't think it's wrong to say, I'm sorry if you mean I'm sorry. And I think that's fine. I think it's bad advice to tell women not to use our feminine voice when it is appropriate. And I have really softened my approach over the years as I have found that authenticity. And this is my voice. I'm not going to parrot somebody else's voice, whether it's a man or a woman. I sit here and process a little bit and think about, you know, there was a time where, oh, you need to wear a power suit because you need to fit in. Well, I'm fine showing up in a dress or a suit or whatever I want to. So I think the authenticity is not only in our voice, but in our presence, how we carry ourselves. And that really shows, and to me, this is the pay it forward piece, how to be yourself and still lead and still even be a powerful person, which the way I just said that is silly because we should own our power as women. And I feel like we struggle with that still a little bit today.
Lindsay, what about you? Your thoughts on leading authentically?
I'm still busy like shaking my head in agreement with everything Suzanne said. I think there's so much about that. I would say authenticity has changed for me over time. And I think increasingly it is feeling in my stomach or a way of being centered. When I first started and still when I come back to like the basics, it's like, what is the right thing to do? Am I doing the right thing? And I think that speaks to like whether that's standing ground on a thing and being perceived potentially as stubborn or those kinds of things. I come back to doing the right thing. And I think for me, it's been hard because of all the inputs that I think as a profession, I think sometimes we work really hard to set all of our learners up for success. And we have lots of input and advice and maybe even podcasts. But I think, you know, it's constant like in information coming in. And I think it took me maybe longer than I expected it to figure out like, where is my voice in all of that? And to really feel comfortable with my voice being different than the voices that were in the room and wondering if that made me less meaningful as a leader or less impactful as a leader as a person. And so I think like for me, authenticity right now is, you know, really leaning into strengths, figuring out what are they, how do I use them? How do I honor them and acknowledge that like my voice in the room or my presence in the room might be different than my peers, men and women. And really, you know, just, I think honoring that is something that I think is what authenticity means to me today.
Thank you. And Christy, how about you and your thoughts on leading authentically?
Yes, I agree with everything that Suzanne and Kelly have shared so far. I think I'll add 2 points to that in saying I would also include empathy and vulnerability as 2 principles that align with authenticity. You know, being able to understand and really tune into the feelings of others and how their values and beliefs, the things that they're worried about or hopeful for, play into their experience, because then that gives you something to respond to in order to be an authentic leader. And then also being vulnerable to feedback, being willing to hear the feedback of others and how you improve as a leader. But then also being vulnerable and being able to say, you know, this isn't going well, having those open and honest conversations, because I think a lot of times as new leaders, we want everything to go well and that everything will always work perfectly. And we see that when it doesn't, that that's a failure potentially of us as a leader. You become much more comfortable with failure after you've experienced it once or twice. It just doesn't make you happy. But being able to acknowledge that is how you move forward. And also the way that you become more comfortable with taking risks, which is so necessary in our environment when we talk about being able to innovate. And so that vulnerability for failure and receiving feedback and being able to reassess and reevaluate are so important when it comes to authenticity.
I'm so glad I'm mute because I keep saying yes, yes to everything you all are saying. Okay, we're going to move on to our next question. You know, as we reflect on the journey of women leaders and executives, I'm curious your thoughts on where you feel progress has been made And also, are there still opportunities out there to improve the impact of women in pharmacy? So, Lindsay, why don't we start with you on that question?
Thank you. I'm just going to take a minute to really emphasize what Christy said about empathy and vulnerability, because I am a different leader now than I was when I started. And I think I'm a better leader because of empathy and vulnerability. And I think it makes people more effective when you can see someone for where they are and not. I think of some of the things I did as a younger leader, and I wonder how I ever made it. That was very hard on others. And I think in that same vein, I think one of the things that we're doing better at, I think as a profession or maybe as leaders just generally, is I think we've gotten smarter about including women, thinking about that perspective, thinking about the lens of, frankly, a number of other folks. And so I think we've gotten better at that. And I think we, as organizations, are increasingly elevating women and specifically women leaders. And I think really doing a much better job with that. I actually think there's two opportunities in my mind where we could still do more, or that I'm just never satisfied. I think one of them is, I think what Christy said about failing is really crucial. And thinking about how we continue to embrace and grow the concept of failing fast, failing forward, that kind of mentality, I think in my organization is new, and I get really excited that it's growing and that it is very neutral about what kind of human you are when you come to the table. It doesn't matter if what gender you are or what kind of other criteria you check a box about, whether you have experience as a leader, whether you have experience as a clinician. I think creating an environment where it's safe to fail and fail forward and fail fast is good. The other one is that I really like the first question that we start with, which is, did you have someone who advocated for you or who was thinking about how this system does or doesn't support the growth of women leaders in either in your organization or in your community or wherever you might be? And so I think one of the things that I want to see more of are building and refining of systems where it becomes less crucial that you know a person, but that the system is set up to, in its build, support people who are different from the way that we usually do it. And that's where I think women tend to fall in, right? We have different perspectives and strengths and characteristics and qualities and maybe even different commitments outside of work. And so I really like conceptually this idea that we can create equity through building systems that support a wide variety of folks, including women.
Christy, what about you? Opportunities for continued advancement or reflections on how far we've come so far?
I really appreciate the change in the conversation moving away from work-life balance to work-life integration. Because work-life balance always implied that you had a choice to make in that you were going to choose career or you're going to choose your personal life, family, and all the things that we as young women get taught should be our sequence in life. And it's my perspective that that often deterred women from pursuing leadership or executive roles because they couldn't figure out exactly how they were going to balance all of that and do it well. And I will say, I regret bringing up COVID, but I must, because many of us found ourselves in situations where we were serving as, in our roles, school principal, lunch lady, guidance counselor, and doing all of the other things that were required to keep our teams as well as our families and our friends safe during that time period. And on the other side of that, we've come out with discussions about integration. And I think that goes to say that there are different periods in our lives where we have to shift our areas of focus. And sometimes we can lean into our professional selves, and sometimes we have to lean into our personal selves. We find ourselves potentially early in our career, coming out the gates, gung-ho, there all hours of the day, making sure that things work well. And then we may start families and have to pull back a little bit. And then as the children get older, we jump back in potentially. And then family gets older,
you may find yourself taking care of parents, elderly parents, which often falls on the daughters to do. That's just one of those things. And so it allows for that natural waxing and waning of your executive or leadership journey, which is the way it should have always been designed. And my hope is that that takes away that barrier, that self-doubt, can I do this and can I do it well for more women? And that we as leaders, we as employers foster those environments and call them out when they're less than supportive of that natural course of the professional journey.
Thank you, Christy. And Suzanne, let's hear your thoughts.
So many great comments. I agree 100% with Lindsay and Christy. And I was just writing myself a few notes too, because it just generates so much thought and passion for myself around how far we've come in the journey. But in one point, and you both made the point around culture of the organization, I think it is incumbent as experienced leaders that we point out those situations that are not meeting the goals of anybody that is at the table or in the room. It's hard to do, and it's a conversation that really is still fairly recent. But when I look at the generation of pharmacists coming in, new students, new residents, there's an expectation that we are helping to pave that path. And rightly so, I think. So I think we have to really pay attention to what's going on in our organization and call out situations that sometimes people say, oh, it's old school or something like that, but it's not acceptable. And we need to make sure there's a path for everybody. The other thing, and I'm going to be a little pragmatic here, is I hope this is not the case as much as it was, but I feel like I've kind of fought for my pay and my salary every time I've made a transition. And what I've learned over time is value yourself and know that you have a value, or else somebody would not be offering you a job or a promotion or a place, and set a minimum for that standard for yourself. So be able to go in and say, this is my value and I'm not accepting less. I've never had anybody tell me no. So I just want to share that a lot of times there's like, oh, you know, I'm so excited that I got the job, but then you find out maybe I'm not being compensated in a way that other people were or that I should be. So I just think that's really important. And that's maybe something that hasn't changed. I think it depends on, you know, maybe where you are regionally and that sort of thing. But I feel like that's something that women today still have to fight for, given all the progress that we've made, and all the great things that have happened. That one's really pragmatic, but it's important because at the end of the day, it helps you take care of everything else we've talked about.
Great advice on that question and all the questions that we've had today. Unfortunately, that is all the time that we have for this podcast. So I do want to thank Lindsay, Christy, Suzanne. Thank you for joining us today. Find out more member exclusive content, including resources for your self-development, leading pharmacy enterprises and teams, and practice management on the ASHV website. Thank you for joining us. And if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to the ASHP official podcast.
Thank you for listening to ASHP Official, the voice of pharmacists advancing healthcare. Be sure to visit ashp.org/podcast to discover more great episodes, access show notes, and download the episode transcript. If you loved the episode and want to hear more, be sure to subscribe, rate, or leave a review. Join us next time on ASHP Official.